All right, so today we're going to be doing a deep dive into Isaiah's suffering servant.
Okay.
We're going to be using a lecture by Dr. Marv Wilson. He's a scholar of the prophets.
Oh, great.
And this figure of the suffering servant has been something that has intrigued both Jewish and Christian thinkers for centuries.
Right.
But their interpretations are often worlds apart.
Yeah.
So we're going to be looking at those different viewpoints and seeing what we can learn from them.
Sounds good.
So to get started, one of the first things that Dr. Wilson talks about is that the term servant of the Lord, or Eded Yahweh in Hebrew,
okay,
it isn't always about some solitary tragic figure.
It's true.
So it's used in some surprising ways throughout the Old Testament.
Yeah, it is. And, it can be applied to individuals like Moses and David.
Okay.
But it can also apply to groups like the Levites and even entire nations like Israel.
Wow.
It can even refer to Nebuchadnezzar.
Or Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king who destroyed Jerusalem.
The one and the same.
He's referred to as God's servant.
He is.
How could that be?
Well, it's an interesting point. Yeah. It really makes you think God's plan might be a lot more intricate.
Right.
And we realize.
Yeah.
And that even those who we perceive as enemies can play a role in his grand scheme.
So it's kind of messing with our ideas of good versus evil.
It does.
And how God might use even devastating events to accomplish his purposes.
Right.
Hmm. That's a lot to think about.
It is.
So, okay. So servant of the Lord can be used in these really diverse ways.
Yeah.
How does it function within the book of Isaiah itself?
Well, Dr. Wilson highlights four distinct ways that Isaiah uses the term.
Okay.
First, you have corporate Israel,
okay,
the whole nation chosen to serve God's purpose.
Uh-huh.
And then you have the righteous remnant,
okay,
that faithful group within Israel that hold fast to their covenant with God, even when times are tough.
Even during those difficult times.
Exactly. And they're often called Jeshurun, which means upright one.
Oh, okay.
Which kind of hints at God's special affection.
Yeah.
For those who remain true.
So even when the nation as a whole might stray,
right,
there's this core group.
Exactly.
The Jeshurun, that are really embodying this faithfulness. It's like they're carrying the torch.
They are.
Keeping the flame alive.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's two.
That's two.
What's number three?
Number three is that the prophet himself, Isaiah, might be the suffering servant.
Okay.
So he could be referring to his own role as God's messenger.
Mm.
Enduring hardship to deliver God's truth.
Yeah. And you can imagine the courage that it took.
Oh, absolutely.
To speak truth to power, knowing that you might be persecuted for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So he may have seen himself as a living embodiment of this concept.
Right.
Suffering for the sake of conveying God's message.
And this sets up this interesting foreshadowing within Isaiah, where he's kind of laying the groundwork for later interpretations of the suffering servant concept.
So, for instance, there's that passage in Isaiah 61.
Yeah.
The one about bringing comfort and freedom, which Jesus later quotes.
Exactly.
What if Isaiah was originally talking about his own ministry?
It's a possibility.
Wow, that's a really cool connection.
Yeah.
And, of course, we can't talk about the suffering servant without addressing it to the most well-known interpretation,
which is
the Messiah.
Exactly.
And this is where we see the biggest difference between Jewish and Christian interpretations.
Right.
So for Christians, Isaiah 53 points directly to Jesus as the ultimate suffering servant.
Right.
The one who redeems humanity through his death and resurrection.
Yeah. And it was so sinful to early Christian belief that they included Isaiah 53 in their readings alongside the Torah.
Wow. So even before Jesus, this idea of a suffering servant was already in Jewish thought.
It was there.
But then Jesus comes along and it takes on this whole new salvific dimension.
Exactly.
So when we get to Isaiah 53 specifically, this is where we see the interpretations truly split.
Right.
So a lot of Jewish scholars have historically understood Isaiah 53 as referring to the collective suffering of the Jewish people.
Yeah.
Especially during times of persecution.
Makes sense.
Right. Considering all the hardship and oppression they've endured.
Yeah.
It's a way of finding meaning and hope amidst unimaginable pain.
Absolutely.
But Christians view Isaiah 53 through a different lens.
They do.
They see it as a direct prophecy.
Yeah.
Fulfilled in Jesus, who willingly took on the sins of humanity and endured suffering.
To offer salvation.
Right. And they have a lot of support for that in the New Testament.
They do.
Which frequently quotes Isaiah 53.
Right.
It's so fascinating how the same text can evoke these very different but profound meanings.
Yeah.
Depending on your background and your beliefs.
Right.
It really makes you wonder if there's a way to bridge those interpretations.
It does.
To find common ground in this shared experience of suffering.
Right.
And hope for redemption.
That's a great question.
And it's interesting that Isaiah 53 was eventually removed from Jewish liturgical readings.
Right.
And it just highlights how this passage became this point of contention between Jews and Christians, a source of division rather than unity.
Yeah, and it makes you think about how we interpret even sacred texts in ways that might just reinforce our own biases and perspectives.
Very true.
But let's get back to the text itself for a second.
Okay.
Dr. Wilson made a fascinating point about the structure of Isaiah 53.
Okay.
He said it's kind of like reading the ending of a book first.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
What did you make of that?
Well, he was referring to how it starts by describing the servant's ultimate victory, his exaltation.
Right.
And then it goes back and tells us about all the brutal details of his suffering.
Right. So we get the ending first.
Yeah, like a spoiler alert, but for a spiritual journey.
Exactly. And that structure is doing something interesting.
Okay.
It's setting up this tension, this anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
We know he's going to be victorious.
Yeah.
But then we go back and witness the painful path that leads to that victory.
And the language that's used to describe his suffering is intense.
It's graphic.
Yeah, he's described as disfigured, marred beyond human semblance.
Right.
It creates this stark contrast.
It does.
With the glory that awaits him.
Yeah.
It's almost like the ugliness of that suffering.
Yeah.
Makes the eventual victory that much more powerful.
It does. It's like you can't have the triumph without the struggle.
Right. The light without the darkness.
Exactly. It's not just about the physical details, but it's about conveying the magnitude of that sacrifice and the power of that redemption.
So it's not just a chronological account.
No.
It's deliberately structured to evoke this emotional and spiritual response to make us feel the weight of that sacrifice and the awe of the eventual triumph.
And this theme of transformation through suffering isn't unique to Isaiah. It comes up in a lot of religions and philosophies.
It does.
It speaks to this universal human experience of finding growth and transcendence in our darkest moments.
Yeah. So it's a reminder that our struggles can be a source of strength.
Absolutely.
That even when we're facing adversity, there's this possibility for transformation.
Right. And Dr. Wilson brought up a point that I thought was really thought-provoking.
Okay.
He said that Isaiah 53 grapples with this question of why people, even when they're presented with evidence, sometimes refuse to believe.
Yeah, I remember that.
Remember how he connected that to the Gospel of John?
Yes.
Where they quote Isaiah to explain why people didn't believe in Jesus's miracle.
Yeah, even those who witnessed them couldn't or wouldn't grasp the truth.
Right.
It's fascinating. It's what creates that blindness.
Yeah.
Is it fear? Is it pride? Is it clinging to old ways of thinking?
It's a good question.
And how can we overcome those barriers and see clearly?
Yeah, it's a challenge we all face.
It is.
To be open to new perspectives, to question our own assumptions, to recognize how our biases shape our understanding of the world.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, maybe it's pointing to the limitations of relying only on logic or evidence.
Right.
Maybe understanding spiritual truths requires a different kind of seeing.
It does.
A shift in perception that goes beyond just the intellectual.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like we need to develop this literacy of faith.
I like that.
A way of reading between the lines and recognizing the symbolic language of faith.
That's really good literacy of faith.
So for someone listening, what are some tips they can use to develop this deeper understanding when they're reading biblical prophecy?
That's a great question.
I think it starts with humility.
Okay.
Recognizing that we don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
Approaching these texts with an open mind.
Right.
Willingness to sit with the discomfort of not knowing.
Right.
Allowing the mystery to unfold.
So it's about engaging with these texts, not just as historical documents, but as living sources of wisdom.
Yes.
That can still speak to us today.
And sometimes it might even mean stepping outside our comfort zones.
Yeah.
Exploring interpretations.
Right.
That challenge our preconceived notions.
Exactly. Like how we were surprised to learn about Nebuchadnezzar being called God's servant.
Totally upended our understanding.
It did.
And it reminds us that there's always more to learn.
Always.
If you're willing to look with open eyes.
Yeah.
And open hearts.
And speaking of Nebuchadnezzar, maybe that's a good place to leave our listener with a question.
Okay.
If he, the destroyer of Jerusalem, could be considered God's servant, what does that tell us about how God might be working through seemingly negative or unexpected events in our own lives?
That's a powerful question.
It is.
It suggests that even our struggles and our challenges can somehow be woven into God's larger tapestry of purpose.
That's right.
And that's a thought that can bring us comfort and a sense of awe.
It can.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Isaiah's suffering servant.
Yeah.
So when we left off, we were talking about how interpretations of this passage differ between Jewish and Christian traditions.
Yeah.
And we talked about how Isaiah 53 is structured kind of like you're reading the ending of a book first.
Right.
Can we maybe break down some of those specifics?
Sure. So this contrast between suffering of exaltation is a major theme in Isaiah 53.
Yeah.
And it really challenges us to look beyond our immediate circumstances.
Right.
And consider the possibility of transformation and redemption, even when we're facing huge adversity.
Yeah.
Let's break it down a little further.
Okay, so how does Isaiah 53 actually depict the servant's suffering?
Well, the language is raw and visceral.
Mm.
The servant is described as despised and rejected.
Okay.
A man of sorrows and familiar with suffering.
Yeah.
We're told he's carrying the burdens of others,
taking
on their pain and grief as his own.
Wow. So he's not just passively enduring suffering.
No.
But actively absorbing the negativity.
It's true.
The pain of the world around him.
That's a good way to put it. He becomes a scapegoat, taking on the sins of others.
So the imagery that's used to describe his physical condition is striking.
It is. We're told he's marred beyond human semblance.
Wow.
Disfigured and wounded, bearing the marks of suffering.
Yeah, that's a disturbing image.
It is.
What do you think is the purpose of using such graphic descriptions?
I think it's meant to help us understand the depth of the servant's sacrifice.
Okay.
The suffering isn't sugar-coated or minimized.
Yeah.
It's presented in all its raw, brutal reality.
So it helps us grasp the magnitude
of
what he endures.
Yes.
For the sake of others.
Exactly. And, you know, this reminds me of what we talked about earlier, this idea of transformation through suffering.
Uh-huh.
The servant's path to exaltation doesn't bypass the valley of pain. It goes straight through it.
It seems like a common theme.
It is.
In a lot of different spiritual traditions.
Yeah, you see it everywhere.
Right, this idea that real growth
and
understanding often come from confronting and overcoming challenges.
Absolutely.
Facing our own darkness.
Right.
To find the light.
Exactly.
That lies beyond.
It's a message of hope and resilience.
Yeah.
But not a passive acceptance of suffering.
So it's about acknowledging the reality of pain.
Right.
But recognizing the potential for transformation.
Exactly.
That it holds.
And that potential comes from the servant's willingness to bear the weight of other people's burdens.
To take on their suffering as his own.
Exactly. That's the heart of his mission.
It's a powerful reminder that true strength can be found in vulnerability.
Absolutely.
In the willingness to embrace suffering.
Yes.
Not as an end in itself.
Right.
But as a path to healing and redemption.
This idea of vicarious suffering is interesting.
Yeah.
One person taking on the pain of others.
Yeah, it has huge theological and ethical implications.
It really does. It raises questions about sacrifice, redemption, the interconnectedness of human experience.
Right, and we see this in a lot of different religious and philosophical traditions.
Yeah, this longing for someone or something to bear the weight of our suffering,
right,
to offer hope and healing when we face darkness.
And Isaiah 53 explores this in a way that's both deeply personal and profoundly cosmic.
Right. It's not just about individual pain.
Okay.
It's about bearing the weight of humanity's brokenness.
Taking on the sins of the world.
Exactly. And this brings us back to the Christian interpretation of Isaiah 53, where Jesus is seen as the ultimate fulfillment of the suffering servant prophecy.
His death on the cross
is
understood as this sacrifice that atones for the sins of humanity.
Yes. Offering salvation and reconciliation with God.
And this has really shaped Christian theology and spirituality, influencing how they understand God's love, mercy, and the redemptive power of suffering.
Absolutely. And even within Christian tradition,
there
are different perspectives on the meaning and implications of Jesus' sacrifice.
Right. So some Christians focus on the substitutionary nature of Jesus' death,
while
others emphasize the transformative power of his love and self-giving.
It's a rich and complex theological landscape.
It is.
Which just shows the enduring power of Isaiah 53
to
inspire reflection and interpretation.
Across different cultures and different centuries.
Absolutely.
One thing that really struck me from Dr. Wilson's lecture was his discussion of the question of unbelief.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting.
Isaiah 53 grapples with why people, even when they're presented with evidence, might choose not to believe.
And you remember how he connected that with the Gospel of John, where Isaiah is quoted to explain the disbelief surrounding Jesus' miracles.
Yeah, even those who witnessed those extraordinary events struggled to comprehend.
I know.
And accept what they were seeing.
It's a real paradox.
It is.
What is faith?
Yeah. How do we grasp these spiritual truths?
Right.
It's not always about logic or empirical evidence.
Right. Sometimes there's a deeper resistance, this kind of blindness that prevents us from seeing what's right in front of us.
Yeah, it's like there are different levels of seeing.
There are.
Understanding spiritual truths requires this shift in perception.
It does.
That goes beyond just the purely intellectual.
It requires opening our hearts and minds to possibilities beyond our current understanding.
It's a challenge we all face.
It is.
Being willing to question our assumptions.
Right.
To be open to new ways of seeing the world.
Yeah.
To recognize how our own biases and experiences shape our understanding of truth.
And this is so relevant today.
It is.
We're bombarded with information and all these competing narratives.
Right. It's more important now than ever.
Absolutely.
To develop a discerning mind.
Uh-huh.
To sift through all the noise and identify what really matters.
Yeah. It's about developing a spiritual literacy.
I like that.
A way of reading not just texts, but the world around us.
Right.
With an eye for the deeper meaning.
Yeah.
That might be hidden beneath the surface.
As we continue our deep dive into Isaiah 53,
okay,
what's one question or insight
that
you think our listeners should take away?
The question, I think, is this.
Okay.
What does the suffering servant mean for you personally?
Mm.
How does it challenge your understanding of suffering?
Okay.
Of sacrifice and the possibility of redemption?
So it pushes us beyond the text itself.
It does.
To consider its relevance for our own lives and our own understanding of the world.
Because really, Isaiah 53 isn't just a historical account.
Right.
Or a theological treatise.
It's a story about transformation.
It is.
About the possibility of finding hope and meaning.
Yeah.
Even in the darkest circumstances.
And that's a story that continues to resonate with people.
It does.
Across cultures throughout history.
It speaks to our desire for healing.
Yeah.
For connection.
Uh-huh.
And for a sense of purpose that goes beyond our individual lives.
Right. And it makes us think about how we might live out the servant spirit of compassion and selflessness
in our own lives.
Exactly.
So as we get into the final part of our deep dive.
Okay.
Let's keep this question in mind.
Right.
How can we, in our own unique ways, become instruments of healing and hope in a world that needs them so badly?
That's a great question.
Welcome back to our exploration of Isaiah's suffering servant.
Yeah.
We've uncovered so much about this passage.
We have.
From the different interpretations in Jewish and Christian traditions.
Right.
To that idea of transformation through suffering.
Absolutely.
But before we wrap up our deep dive.
Okay.
What can we learn from Isaiah 53 that's relevant for our lives today?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it?
It is. What can we actually take away from this ancient text?
Well, Isaiah 53, it isn't just some historical relic.
Right.
It speaks to the human condition in ways that are just as powerful today as they were centuries ago.
So it's not just about understanding the text.
Right.
But about finding those timeless truths.
That can inform our present perspectives and experiences.
I like that. So one of the most powerful takeaways for me is that true strength often comes from vulnerability.
Hmm.
So the suffering servant doesn't try to hide from pain
or
pretend it doesn't exist.
No, he embraces it.
Yeah, he turns it into an act of selfless love and compassion.
That's a radical concept.
It is, especially in our modern culture.
Yeah.
Where strength is associated with stoicism, suppressing emotions.
Right, like it out.
Yeah, but Isaiah 53 points to a different kind of strength.
It does.
One that's rooted in empathy and willingness to be present with suffering, our own and that of others.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that we're not meant to carry our burdens alone.
Right.
You know, the suffering servant takes on the pain of others.
Yeah.
Offering solace and healing.
And this speaks to the interconnectedness of human experience.
It does.
And the power of compassion.
Such an important reminder.
It is.
Especially in a world that can feel so isolating.
Yeah.
And individualistic.
Right.
Isaiah 53 reminds us that we're all part of this web of humanity.
We're not alone in our struggles.
We're not.
And neither are others.
And it challenges us to think about how we can embody this in our own lives.
Right.
It's not about becoming martyrs.
Right.
It's about cultivating sensitivity to the needs of others.
So noticing those suffering servants in our own communities.
Yes, right.
The people who are carrying heavy burdens.
Yeah. And finding ways to support them.
Yeah.
To comfort them.
Offer a listening ear.
Exactly.
And it's also about acknowledging the ways we might be contributing to others' suffering.
It is, even unintentionally.
Yeah.
It's a call to self-reflection, examine our biases and our actions.
This makes me think about what Dr. Wilson was saying about unbelief.
Yeah.
He talked about how even those who witnessed Jesus's miracles struggled to believe.
Right.
It's like this blindness to suffering is still a problem today.
Absolutely. It's easy to become desensitized to the suffering around us, to look away from the uncomfortable, distance ourselves from those who are hurting.
But Isaiah 53 forces us to confront that.
It does.
To open our eyes and see the pain of others.
And then to actually do something about it.
Right. So cultivating a more compassionate and empathetic way of seeing the world.
Recognizing the dignity and worth of every human being.
Yeah. And that leads to the final takeaway I want to highlight.
Okay.
This enduring possibility of hope and redemption.
Yeah.
Even in the midst of darkness.
The path of the suffering servant.
Yeah.
Leads through suffering.
It does.
But it ends in exaltation and victory.
So it's a reminder that even in our darkest moments.
Right.
There's potential for transformation and growth.
Suffering doesn't have to have the last word.
Right. Love, compassion, the pursuit of justice.
They can prevail.
Yeah. And that's a message that can sustain us.
Yeah.
Not just when we face personal struggles.
Right.
But when we're confronted with injustice on a larger scale.
It's a call to action.
It is.
To be agents of healing and hope.
So as we wrap up this deep dive.
Yeah.
The most important thing to remember is that Isaiah 53
uh-huh.
isn't just a story about some figure from the past.
Right.
It's a living text that speaks to what it means to be human.
It does, to experience suffering.
To search for meaning and to find hope, even in the face of adversity.
And it challenges us to live lives that are more compassionate, more empathetic, and more just.
This has been both challenging and inspiring.
It has.
Isaiah 53 is a text that I'll keep coming back to.
I think we all will.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Isaiah's suffering servant.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope it sparked your own curiosity and giving you some new ways to think about this text.